The Irish Times Inside Business Podcast, in association with EY, building a better working world.
Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. This week we're looking at the lifting of air travel restrictions on Monday and the impact it has had on Irish aviation and the hospitality sector. So how are the new rules working? When will transatlantic travel begin again in earnest? And what rules will apply when indoor dining resumes on July 26th? These and other questions are answered by Eoin Amara Walsh, Chief Executive of the Irish Travel Industry Confederation, and Barry O'Halloran of the Irish Times. Before that, you might have noticed that Inside Business has a new sponsor in the shape of leading professional services firm EY Ireland. I'd like to welcome them aboard. Now, back to the resumption of air travel, and I began by asking Barry O'Halloran to recap how the rules changed on Monday and what it has meant in terms of passenger numbers in and out of Irish airports.
Hi, Ciarán. Well, as everybody knows at this stage, there was a significant loosening of restrictions on Monday. That mostly related to Europe and the EU market. Now, the figures from Eurocontrol, which is the overall air navigation body for Europe, show that there were 393 flights in and out of the Republic on Monday. That was a 25% improvement on the previous week, well, July the 11th to be precise, when there were 313 flights, which left us lingering behind Montenegro, actually. So there was an obvious and widely expected step up. Aer Lingus was responsible for around 66 of those flights, while Ryanair managed 176. Interestingly, Aer Lingus told me that on the same day in 2019, they would have had 346 flights. I'm not entirely sure about precise passenger numbers, but they were probably higher than 20,000 on Monday and are expected to be kind of around that, I think, for the rest of the week. And that would have been considerably more than the sort of 14 or 15,000 that airports might have seen over previous weeks, particularly since the beginning of July. So that is a fairly marked step up on activity, but we are still very, very far behind the rest of Europe. On the basis of a sort of 393 flights on Monday, that is around 40% of the 955 that we would have seen on the comparable day in 2019. So we're still basically two-thirds behind, or the guts of two-thirds behind, whereas Europe is now at around sort of 62, 63% of pre-COVID traffic. There were 20 million seats available on aircraft between Western, Eastern and Central Europe on Monday, which was, I think, around 33, 34% less than the same period in 2019. So there's still a big gap for everybody to bridge, but our gap is far larger than everyone else's.
Yeah, and I guess we have to start somewhere. And just in terms of going forward, Barry, for the rest of the summer, are the airlines planning to add more flights? Are we going to see more people travelling through our airports as the days and weeks click on?
Hopefully we will. The position with the airlines at the moment is that they are very, very cautious about this market. But Ryanair has been adding flights to Shannon in particular, where it is now offering about, I think, 18 or 19 flights. Aer Lingus has been very, very critical of ongoing restrictions that affect both the UK and US. But they certainly haven't said, yes, we are going to add more flights. But I think that for now, airlines are adopting a very much wait and see approach to this.
Barry, there seems to be some confusion around children and the rules around children travelling with vaccinated parents. Can you shed any light as to precisely where we're at with that? And do they vary between, let's say, EU countries and the likes of the UK and the US?
Yeah, they vary between EU countries and the likes of the UK and the US. The basic rules are that 11 to 18-year-olds require PCR tests or self-isolation if they're returning into this country with their vaccinated parents, whereas EU children are traveling with vaccinated parents are treated exactly the same as their parents. In other words, they're not subject to any restrictions. So yeah, there's still a deal of of confusion, and there's still quite a lot of different rules and different restrictions that have to be negotiated. I mean, if anyone is planning on flying in the next few weeks, it's a good idea to maybe check in on the government, the various government websites, and there are quite a few that deal with these issues right now. And you actually have to do a fair bit of sifting to work out precisely what applies where. But in broad terms, the EU should be open. Everybody gets a digital cert, whether they're vaccinated or whether they have a negative test or whether they are immune. The ongoing restrictions that apply elsewhere apply to the US and the UK. And then at the back of all of that, there are still hotel quarantines for people arriving from some countries.
Onamara Walsh, Monday must have been a good day for your members after such a hard slog over the past 16 months.
Yeah, finally, we have some sort of positive news to hang on to. I mean, international travel and tourism effectively had ceased for the guts of 16 months. And finally, the non-essential travel ban was lifted, as Barry said, on the 19th of July. So international leisure travel and tourism is allowed again. So it's great for the airlines. It's great for the airport. And it should be good for the Irish tourism industry here on the ground. Although numbers will be modest initially, but hopefully as consumer confidence returns and COVID infection rates remain stable, we'll start seeing inbound tourists into the country again. And that's critical for the industry I'm involved in, because about 75% of our annual income or revenue is determined by international tourists. So there's a lot of talk about the domestic market and we're all enjoying the great weather, which is fantastic, but it's for a few very short weeks. And on September 1st, when the schools go back, the domestic market, unfortunately, falls off a cliff. So we desperately need to get the international tourists going again. And the first step in relation to that was getting the non-essential travel ban lifted, which happened obviously on Monday, which was about 3 weeks or so after the rest of Europe. But at least now the digital COVID cert is in existence, it's being used, and airlines can start flying again.
Owen, is this the right time to be opening up our borders, given that the Delta variant is circulating so widely and we know it's more transmissible than earlier versions of the virus, and even people who are double vaccinated? We're hearing plenty of reports of well-known people who've been double vaccinated, like Sajid Javid, who, you know, have contracted COVID, presumably as a result of the Delta variant.
Well, I suppose, you know, public health comes first and foremost, and you know, the aviation industry can't just, decide what it wants to do. It has to follow public health guidelines. And the public health guidelines across Europe are the digital COVID cert and predominantly the vaccine, or as Barry said, proof of prior infection, which effectively gives you immunity, or else the negative PCR test. So all that acts as a bulwark against the spread of COVID, or that's what we hope and that's what we've been led to believe. And you're right, the double vaccination doesn't seem to give 100% inoculation against the virus, but what it does seem to do is give 100% or near 100% prevention against a serious illness or hospitalization or God forbid, a death. So I think that's something that we all have to sort of accept. And you know, the aviation and tourism industry, no more than other industries, will obviously operate by whatever the strictest and best public health guidelines are. And that's what we're doing at the moment. But, you know, we can't mothball an industry like aviation for forever. You know, as each week and as each month goes by that aircraft are parked on the tarmac, it's costing millions of euro to airlines. You've seen airlines across Europe bailed out. IAG and Ryanair equally are under intense pressure to actually get airlines in the sky, but obviously in a safe and sustainable way. And I think we have that formula now. And obviously we'll be monitoring it and keeping a very close eye on infection rates. But I suppose infection rates maybe aren't the metric that they were 12 months ago. It's now more about hospitalization rates and ICU rates.
Yeah. Give us some numbers, Owen, about the hit to the broad tourism hospitality sector over the past 16 months. In Ireland, for example, I mean, how many people have been laid off either temporarily or permanently? How many businesses have closed?
Yeah, well, it's been absolutely harrowing and it's been a hammering impact. We reckon, the Irish Tourism Industry Confederation reckon that The revenue is down about 90%. And remember, this was a 9 billion euro industry pre-pandemic. So revenue down 90% and about 160,000 job losses. So, you know, tourism, if you like, is the very definition of the free and unfettered movement of people. And obviously COVID has been a nuclear bomb in the middle of that. So our industry has been disproportionately impacted by COVID. There's been lots and lots of job losses, lots and lots of business failures. Thankfully, the government came in with a range of supports which helped keep businesses to a certain extent alive, but nothing will replace demand. So what's critical, I think, now this summer and equally into autumn and into next year is that government supports are kept in place, maybe gradually reduced, but crucially we stimulate demand and make sure that hotels, airlines, B&Bs, restaurants, vintners, attractions, all the various businesses within the sector actually see people coming through their doors and hear the tills chang again. There's 20,000 businesses in the tourism and hospitality sector in Ireland. It is, certainly pre-pandemic days, it was Ireland's largest indigenous industry. And crucially, it's the biggest regional employer we have. And that's very evident now. If you look along swathes of the Wild Atlantic Way, there's very little other industry or economic activity but for tourism. And that's great at the moment that it's dubs over in Mayo or whatever. But as I say, on September 1st, when the schools go back, that domestic market goes, and we have to ensure that the international tourist is back in the country.
At EY, our purpose is to build a better working world. As one of Ireland's leading professional services firms, our exceptional people are at the centre of everything we do. We deploy technology at speed and innovation at scale to deliver exceptional solutions for our clients, enabling them to transform and grow. To find out more, visit ey.com.
Now, it hasn't all been smooth sailing or smooth flying for some Irish travellers heading abroad this week, because we've heard reports from Malta of a number of Irish people arriving into Malta, and it seems they didn't have the right paperwork or the right certificate to get through and enjoy their holiday. They're faced with a situation where they either have to go into hotel quarantine, or they leave the country, or they somehow find the proper paperwork. What's happened there, Owen?
Well, that's more outbound travel as opposed to inbound tourism, which I suppose is my area of expertise. But as far as I understand, Malta had a slightly and Barry might have some info on this, had a slightly different rule on the digital COVID cert, whereby they wanted to see a digital version of it, whereas some Irish passengers arrived with the paper format, which effectively is the same document but presented in a different form. And as a result, the immigration officers in Valletta effectively said, sorry, you guys aren't going beyond the mandatory hotel quarantine. And as I understand it at the moment, the Foreign Affairs Department and the Irish Embassy and so on is trying to work might and main to make sure that those Irish travellers who, after all, have the correct paperwork but just in the wrong form, are allowed leave the hotel and enjoy their holiday and come back safely. But it just shows, I think, how fraught and how difficult and how tricky international travel and tourism is when you have a global pandemic and you have different public health guidelines in different countries. So Barry said it at the outset, I think if any Irish person is traveling abroad, they have to very carefully check what the criteria is in the country that they're going to. So, for example, I'm sure the Maltese government would say that they clearly stated on their websites and in their destination material that the digital COVID cert had to be presented in a specific form. But obviously, some Irish travellers fell foul of that.
Barry, just on that point, I mean, it's a bit of a blow to this whole EU system, isn't it, when something like that occurs in Malta?
Yes, Ciarán, it is. But look, it's worth pointing out that it's actually quite easy to download this this digital cert. For instance, I think I'm well known for being technically incompetent, and I received mine at the weekend. I've downloaded it into two mobile phones. It goes into your iPhone wallet, and it will also, if you have the COVID tracker app, it can easily be downloaded into that. So once again, the trick is check for this, I would say to anyone traveling, and I intend doing this myself, download it digitally and print it off, and maybe print off two or three copies as well, just as a backup. But it can be downloaded digitally onto pretty much any mobile device you have. And I would do that ahead of traveling and bring it with me. They, from what I've seen, and I just did a very quick kind of glance around some of this ahead of the podcast this morning. And it does seem to me that most EU countries are looking for it in a digital format. So I would say get it into a digital format as a matter of priority if you're traveling.
Oh, and one market that's effectively closed off to us at the minute is the United States. And that's a key market for tourism here in Ireland, isn't it? There are very few transatlantic flights at the moment, and no Irish people are allowed to go into the US unless they're American citizens or they have a green card. So there are, you know, there has been chatter that the Biden administration might loosen those rules. How soon do you think that might come back? And what are the chances of us getting our transit? We had a pretty good transatlantic network pre-pandemic. What are the chances of that coming back in its full form?
Yeah, I mean, it's a critical point, if you like, because the European markets are great, and obviously Britain is our nearest neighbour and very important. But the US market, in terms of inbound tourism, they're the big spenders. They're the ones that travel throughout the regions. They spend, I think, on average 10 days in the country, stay in the fancy hotels, go out for the nice meals, spend quite a lot of money in the shops. US visitors obviously are allowed into Ireland, which is great, but that Biden ban is still in place for Irish or European visitors going to the States. So that poses airlines a massive problem because they obviously need to fill the aircraft but both ways. There is talk of the Biden administration relaxing that restriction and allowing vaccinated travellers from Ireland and Europe into the States. And that needs to happen sooner rather than later, because Ireland and Aer Lingus in particular had done wonderful work pre-pandemic to get the transatlantic traffic to a certain level. I think there was 25 different gateways across North America which were served by Aer Lingus aircraft. Dublin was a hub, and IAG very, very cleverly, if you like, they were marketing Europe in the States, albeit with a stopover in Dublin. And that was brilliant, obviously, for Irish tourism, because it meant that there was a lot of direct routes into Ireland. And you know, Ciarán, that, you know, from 2015 to 2019 or in and around that, Irish tourism was roaring ahead. And a lot of that was driven by the fact that you had new routes open in the States directly into Ireland. And Aer Lingus served them because it obviously helped the whole IAG, if you like, business model. So we have to try and get back to that, but it's going to be a long and an arduous road back to it. So there's going to have to be a huge Ireland Inc. effort, a huge government effort. This is not just an airline or not just a tourism industry who has to try and restore it, but there has to be support from a much broader element of sort of economic contributors. And I do think we will need a multi-million euro aviation package very soon, multi-annual as well, and to incentivize airlines to come back to Ireland, because the you know, as an island nation, we're hugely dependent on air and obviously to a lesser extent on sea. And you know, I speak from a tourism perspective, which is always my focus, but it's equally important for FDI, for exports, for all sorts of other industries, that we have a very strong global connectivity. And we did have, and I mean, a few years ago, or a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic anyway, Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach, and he committed to doubling Ireland's global footprint by 2025. And he said that Ireland wasn't an island on the edge of Europe, but was it's instead an island at the centre of the world. But obviously all that is predicated on connectivity. And we've lost that in spades over the last 18 months, and a huge effort is going to be needed to restore it.
Yeah, Barry, I saw Dalton Phillips, the chief executive of DAA, which operates Dublin and Cork airports, quoted during the week saying that there's going to be real competition now from Manchester for routes, I guess transatlantic routes in particular. And we know that Aer Lingus is basing a couple of aircraft in Manchester going forward for routes across the Atlantic. So it's going to be a battle for Dublin, isn't it, to regain that transatlantic connectivity?
Yes, Ciarán, it is. And you've got to remember that that transatlantic connectivity didn't, you know, it didn't materialize overnight. The point that Owen has just made there in relation to the network that IAG built up, that took 5 years. That took 4 or 5 years to build up, and they were coming from a pretty strong base. A lot of that is gone. There are still transatlantic flights, but a lot of that is gone. It's going to be very difficult to reinstate that. And you've got to remember, Aer Lingus has been losing 1 million a day. Its parent has been looking slightly askance at the tough restrictions over here, and they may be very, very cautious about making big commitments in the initial months and years after this thing has finally receded, which, you know, I'm pretty certain it will. And I think you could see question marks over the newer routes that maybe hadn't quite established themselves. And I'm thinking of destinations maybe on the West Coast, including Seattle, which would be very important from an inward investment point of view, but equally would still be important to the tourism industry, I would have thought. So I think, yeah, there is a big battle. And I think that battle could be won or lost maybe in areas like airport charges and incentives. Now, the government has provided 23 million of a 26 million compensation package, which is aimed at funding some of that. But whether or not that is enough remains to be seen. And I think maybe an overall programme for all Irish airports that ties incentives to restoration of traffic, something that we've already discussed on this podcast in a couple of weeks ago. I think a programme like that might be a sensible move, but I think that you want to get moving on it now.
Yeah, Owen Mara Walsh, I've spoken to a lot of people in the aviation and tourism sectors over the last few months, and there's a real sense within those sectors that the government just hasn't been doing enough in terms of restoring air travel, and there hasn't been enough engagement, and particularly around Eamon Ryan, the Green Party leader and the Minister for Transport. What's your view?
Well, I'm kind of thankful to a certain extent that we're part of the EU and you know we have been, if you like, pulled into the digital COVID cert. But because I think if it was left to the Irish government, I think it would have been slower again. I mean, there was a fear amongst the tourism and aviation industry that we wouldn't see international travel resume until September. You know, we know how cautious and conservative the public health advice has been here, and how willing the government has been to go along with it. So to a certain extent, you know, it's welcome that the digital COVID cert came into being, and if you like, Ireland was had to, if you like, go along with it. Because I don't think the government here, you know, individual ministers or the government, the collective government, have taken the whole aviation challenge as seriously as needs be. And you know, the economy has been supported, if you like, by freight and exports and all that sort of stuff, which is good. But you know, as an island nation, we do need to get the movement of people going again. And as I'm repeating myself here, but you know, from a tourism perspective, that's critical. But also from a foreign direct investment or you know, any of those big sort of multinationals, you need to get people moving from A to B seamlessly. Otherwise, they'll relocate elsewhere. That's the reality of it. And you know, aircraft are no different insofar as aircraft is a mobile asset. So we've already seen, I think it's 4 Aer Lingus aircraft relocated to Manchester, and we'll be flying transatlantic. And Barry mentioned it before, there's huge competition, you mentioned Dalton Phillips, there's huge competition to Dublin in terms of hub status, and that could be anywhere from Manchester to Reykjavik. You know, and there's a whole variety of, if you like, rivals to Dublin who are very keen to eat our lunch. And I know Dublin Airport and DAA will do all that they can. I know that the airlines have a if you like a strong commitment to Dublin, but ultimately the bottom line is what counts, and that's where I think the multi-million euro aviation rescue package needs to be put in place, and needs to be put in place straight away. And the government did set up an aviation task force last year, and that was one of the strong recommendations, and that included everyone from Ryanair to Aer Lingus to the state airports, and the view was very similar that you know, this is a really competitive world that we're in, and if Ireland wants to compete, then, you know, because of the devastating impact of the last 18 months, we will need huge support from government and from the Exchequer to if you like, stabilise the aviation world once again.
Before I let you go, Owen and Barry, I'd just like to ask you, where are you planning to go on your first overseas trip?
Well, Kirana, I was in Italy last September, so I'm hoping to go back there. There's still some stuff I want to see. It was my first time there, and I'm kind of fond of Spain, so I'm slightly leaning that way as well. But it's more than likely going to be Italy, I would say.
Owen?
We were looking at France last night, probably for kind of September, October, the South of France, maybe flying into Nice, all going well.
All right. Well, fingers crossed on that. Owen O'Mara Walsh and Barry O'Halloran, thank you for joining Inside Business.
OK, that's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Owen O'Mara Walsh and Barry O'Halloran. Thanks also to our new sponsor, EY Ireland, for its support. Suzanne Brennan produced the show with JJ Vernon on sound. Remember, you can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook each day. I'm Ciarán Hancock. Until next time, take care.